ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Well, we were going to have Blanca Simpson on this morning, but she's MIA. So that's where we're at. So this morning, what we're going to do is get your questions, and we're going to talk about what is happening here as Alec Murdaugh is going to be getting a new trial, unless something crazy happens between now and then, which, you know, in this case, I guess anything is truly possible. So go ahead, drop your questions and your thoughts on this as we kind of work our way through what the future now holds in the world of Alec Murdaugh, because I think to really fully understand this, we have to grasp it's not just here's a retrial and we're going back in and everything that was known in the first trial is going to be known in the second. That's not at all where this is. What's actually happening here is it's been set back to square one, as if Alec Murdaugh had just been charged. That is key, because there's so many things that are now on the table. And the AG in South Carolina, who is also running for governor, made a statement last week to, I believe it was Fox News Digital. I could be wrong in where he made the claim. But it was essentially saying all options are on the table when asked about the possibility of the death penalty for Alec Murdaugh. Now, it's not. There's a big difference here in saying pursuing death penalty and on the table. Two totally different things. On the table means, well, anything is possible. Anything is on the table. Pursuing, that's actively saying, yep, that's what we're going after. Can they even go that far? Many legal experts would already argue and say that that may not necessarily be something that can truly be pursued. But we'll tackle that a little bit later in the week with some of our attorneys. Joining me this morning to discuss, my co-host, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Robin, let's start with talking about Alec Murdaugh and the fact that he's getting a new trial. Just that news in general. When that came down the other day, what was your initial reaction?
I think me personally was more shocked than a lot of people were. I was kind of thinking that because of Becky Hill having been charged and all that, I was thinking it was almost resolved or pretty much resolved. And all our legal beagles on our show were not surprised by it, because I didn't really realize that all the financial side of it was also going to be challenged as well in appeal. So, you know, the amount of coverage they spent on it. So not surprised. My initial, again, like everyone else's, my initial thing I did when I first saw it and heard it was, is he still in jail? Because are the financial crimes going to hold up? Because innocent until proven guilty-ish a second time, I guess. But I'm still glad he's guilty of all the other stuff to keep him off the streets and away from people.
I mean, the financial crimes, those are pretty solid. The fact that he pled to them, there's just so many things that then go up into the air here with Alec Murdaugh and what happens next. And I'm always surprised. There's so many cases where we think, oh, here's the potential paths of where this could go. And I'm always surprised sometimes by last minute where suddenly, oh, there's this other path they could go down. And I'm wondering and I'm waiting to hear what that's going to be and if there's any way of this affecting the financial crimes legally. I mean, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if there's a mechanism where because this is null and void, then that was what inspired him to then plead over here. And I know Eric kind of hit on that the other day of the possibilities of where that goes. I really wonder. I feel like there's with this decision, the 5-0 statement and ruling and opinion from the Supreme Court of South Carolina. I mean, that's 5-0. I mean, they're pretty much dead set on this didn't work out right.
Right.
So what other dominoes that fell further down the line can be attributed back to this that also need to be reset or if they even can be reset?
Yeah, and from what we're seeing and from what Eric said, and we'll see what Bob says about it tomorrow if we cover it with him as well, is that, yeah, it looks like the financial fraud side is solid still. So but again, you know, because we've seen so many different machinations on the legal side and all the cases we've covered in the last couple of years, it makes you cringe, doesn't it? Because you're like, what are they going to do? We've seen crazy crap before happen. But the thing I think that's going to be different this time around is they're going to have to shift motive up or intent that he had. And I think because of people like Blanca that have come out more very vocally and more theories, you know, people, I think the fence is even hinting at DNA. I think we're going to see more of the same, but a lot more in this trial, hopefully, just with other possibilities. And also, I'm very curious about the fear factor here. You know, inside the world of Alec Murdaugh in South Carolina, that family had a brand that had a name that was very intimidating to people. And I think very much like the Diddy case, a lot of people were afraid to come forward because of the potential impact on them. And I'm very curious now that some time has passed, he's been behind bars. I'm very curious about what new people might come forward or at least have the courage to say more or something because of that. Feeling more safe, because remember, the greatest motivations for behaviors we have as a species is fear. And if fear is lifted because of a retrial, potentially, and he's already behind bars. In other words, it's not. So think about this. People will feel more empowered to do more and say more, hopefully, if they have more to say, because they don't fear, what if he's acquitted? What if they find him not guilty? He could be found not guilty of this, but he's still going to be behind jail unless something sideways goes with the financial crime side.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing. I think a lot of people in South Carolina, in the Low Country, there was a level of feeling vindicated, a level of feeling secure and safe to tell more of their story. I'm wondering if that level of safety still holds for them with Alec Murdaugh having the conviction being thrown out. Obviously, the financial crimes, he's not getting out. I mean, the likelihood he'll ever get out, even if found not guilty here, is slim to nil. But, you know, just because you're behind bars doesn't mean that you don't have power. People from behind bars do have power. But it does feel, I would have to say, going into round two, I'm going to guess, and from everything we've heard from folks there, that power is down. The level is down. The level of concern is down. From reports that we've heard, just unconfirmed, his family's not visiting him. There's not a lot of people that are in Alex's corner anymore other than his attorneys. And I think that certainly means something, too, when it comes to debating whether or not you're going to be speaking out against Alec Murdaugh in some way, shape or form, even if you're completely justified, because you don't know sometimes what some people will do behind the scenes. And Alec Murdaugh, obviously behind the scenes, has a track record of doing shady things and had minions who were able to do that with him.
Yeah. And the things that drive fear are things he shouldn't have any more control of, you wouldn't think, and that is power and influence of decision and policymakers. So that was clearly something that was on their side when he was not incarcerated. And the other thing is money. It's gone. And the amount of which he got devastated financially because of his drug issues that he had and all these other financial horrendous things he was doing to individuals, you know, so that part's gone. So any influence he would have or manipulative tools he had are been, from what we can tell, completely abolished. And the name's been tarnished. As you said, people have been abandoning him. His family doesn't visit him. No one visits him. So hard to imagine a world where there should be fear in place of him, because no matter what, he's still behind bars. So I'm really hoping we see some new things. You know, prosecution is, like they said, the death penalty is on the table. Not that they're pursuing it, but, you know, be aggressive, be strong, and everyone involved in this, because I think the tendrils that the family had connections with through that fear factor probably went further than we saw in the first trial, and hopefully we'll see it more in this trial.
Well, politics are certainly at play here in this trial with Alec Murdaugh. I mean, the likelihood of this thing going to trial in 2026 is very slim to nil. And come next year, you're going to have a new AG in place. Now, the AG has already said, this is the one who just said, all options are on the table. Not I'm pursuing death penalty, but all options are on the table. The other folks who are running to replace him, all of them have said they will go after Alec Murdaugh. They will pursue a new trial. They haven't made statements specifically talking about pursuing the death penalty or even leaving it on the table. Only the one has said that, and that's the person who's running for governor, the person who's likely not going to even be overseeing any of this at the time of the trial. So it's interesting how Alec Murdaugh is almost single-handedly, inadvertently, likely going to affect the governor's race in South Carolina more so as almost a campaign promise, if someone were to look at it that way, of all things are on the table. And I'm wondering how much the AG making that statement is more so a basically weaponizing it, using the Alec Murdaugh case as a boon to vote for that person. Because, well, they believe Alec Murdaugh should die. And if you believe Alec Murdaugh should possibly die, then you should vote for me. I mean, essentially, without saying it directly, that seems to be the card that's kind of being played here.
It's interesting.
It is what it is. It's politics. But it's par for the course, I guess, in this area, or really anywhere, yeah, where you end up having politics weaponizing things that are not necessarily political, like a murder case, for benefit. I mean, we've seen it in other states, in other cities and whatnot, where someone's running for this or that. And sometimes these sort of cases can completely derail a campaign or very much hurt it. If you look at Philadelphia and you have the governor there trying to distance himself from the Ellen Greenberg case, right, and the decisions that were made, sometimes it can hurt you, but it can certainly also help you a lot too, as a rallying call of, we all hate Alec, vote for me. It's like, who hates Alec the most might be the person who wins the governorship of South Carolina next year.
Yeah, I'm definitely agreeing that politics is probably going to come into play with this, or they're going to definitely use it as a lever. It'd be interesting, if both candidates, I don't know how many candidates are running in South Carolina for this, but if the people that are running are smart on this, they will all go on the, we're going to get Alex reconvicted again, bandwagon. Because when you look at the sentiment of this, everything we're seeing, because I know some of the comments are coming in, you know, like, you know, is Buster, do we think Buster's going to testify? The family, why aren't they supporting? Aren't they supporting? I think the general thing we're seeing from everyone that's been close to the family and involved is everyone's pissed. Mm-hmm. And you're not quite sure why they're pissed, you know, but they are angry about this. And so you would think that that would translate into, hey, if poll numbers are saying everyone's pissed that there's a retrial, we better all get on the side of making sure it's a good retrial and he's reconvicted again, because of one greedy, abhorrent individual kind of sparked it. Again, I know when we talked to Eric Faddis last week, he's like, well, the financial stuff would have caused most likely an overturn as well anyway, maybe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Becky Hill definitely was the impetus for really causing this to happen. So I think that's angered so many people that everyone is on the side of, hey, let's get him again. So, well, this will be really interesting.
What do you think is going on right now in the world of Becky Hill when she heard? Obviously, yeah, she's a free woman, but she had been convicted. She got probation and all that. I think in a lot of people's minds, the damage that was done and just the kind of slap on the wrist that you get for it was kind of insane. for the lives that have been affected, the millions and millions and millions of dollars that are going to be respent here, and people's time and energy and everything, just all of it, all because of her greed, all because she thought she wanted to sell that book. What do you think was going through her mind when this verdict came down? We all knew it was probably coming. We didn't know exactly what it would be, but what's your take? What do you think was going on when she got up in the morning and poured herself a cup of coffee?
Devastated. I mean, so Becky Hill, again, don't know her from a hole in the wall except for what we see on social media. She's not a person we would have ever seen on trial had it not been for this. She's not a murderer. She's not a bad person. She's a person I think got caught up, again, pure conjecture, most likely got caught up in the notoriety and the celebrity of what was going on, and got caught up in the cult of more and the disease of comparison. It's like, hey, I can capitalize on this. People have done this before. I'll write a book, or Sears encouraged to write a book, whatever it was, probably single-handedly the biggest regret of her entire life. And it ruined her life. It ruined everyone around her's lives. I mean, she can't be who she thought she was going to be, much like crimes change people's lives. Criminal activity changes people's lives. And she thought she was on the right side of the law for her entire life, obviously, until she wasn't. And she caused an amazing, devastating injustice that was done for the trial and now for herself and her family. Because I think she probably falls within a normal pattern of human behavior generally. Although obviously it spiked up with the greed got a hold of it, or whatever the notoriety that caused her to do what she did. But in general, I mean, how can she function and want to breathe and interact with the world? It's a tough place to be. I mean, I can't imagine it. I'm just glad that I have good, healthy people in my life that I don't have to deal with people like that.
do you think that she's taking responsibility in her own mind, though? I mean, you know, or is she thinking, I didn't do anything wrong?
I don't know.
I would think she doesn't want to probably admit how wrong she was, but probably accepts the fact that she was. Because she's not had any pushback, because we're not seeing any self-centered narcissistic statements, because we're not seeing any victimization of herself to herself, you know, we're not seeing any mouthpieces coming from her, which is a good thing. The best thing she can do is shut the F up and just go away. And it would be really great to see, that would do her a lot of good, is a simple, I was wrong, I'm sorry, and then go away. You know, I mean, some sign of some sort of contrition and embarrassment, I think, would go a long way for public opinion. Because, I mean, if she played up not the victim, and she hasn't done anything yet, and just acknowledged that, hey, we're fallible, and boy, I suck. I mean, there's nowhere to go with it. In other words, when you validate someone's context of you, there's really nowhere else to go with it except, all right, then people move on. Because it's easy to pile on. So I think she probably, because again, I think she falls within that normal parameter of human behavior, probably an outlier in these moments. But people in the situation, when the whole world is saying you're an ugly duckling, the whole world, you do look in the mirror, but how closely she's looking is what is, I think, is the question.
Yeah, I wonder, and sometimes it makes you wonder if they're capable of doing that. You know,
I think we got little data points, little leakages from her. So because I remember before she got convicted and tried. And I remember we're seeing some of the details of what she was doing in the courtroom and what she's doing with the jurist. You know, I've always viewed her as the mother hen. I know it's a bad analogy, but it's not to diminish her or anything. But, you know, kind of, she saw, I think, in her mind, her role was to caretake the court.
yeah,
and to caretake the jurors. And my thought process was she probably has done it this way numerous times in the past. Biggest case she's ever faced. And she probably felt compelled because this is her town, her community, you know, and all these things that she felt very attached to what was going on, attached to the outcome. She lost her objectivity that she should have as an officer of the court to do that. So I think she acted and had been acting prior to this out of a lot of compassion and caring towards others. And because that's of who she was, and it completely backfired on her, all these behaviors. In other words, I don't think this was an outlier behavior. I think this was her arc, you know, of doing these types of things, of taking care of the jurors, being coming personal, and it just backfired.
I think with a lot of people like that, though, they get into their own world of, I think I'm doing this because I'm being compassionate and I'm caring of others, and they're
fell in love with her, she fell
they're,
in love with their own legend.
They're in love with themselves, and then they use that idea of that it's virtuous to be, I'm doing this for you, I'm helping you, I'm giving you this information because I would want, and it's like, no, you're just self-servingly trying to steer the ship because you can't not be in charge, and they hide behind that sort of shit. She kind of strikes me as that, in my opinion.
Well, yeah. So here's how these things typically happen in life. And we see people like this all the time, except they put a roadblock at a certain point, or they have loving critics that say,
and it's not covert narcissism.
Yeah. Well, because what happens is this. So we can do our own little thought experiment, conjecture thought experiment. And that is, so here she is, first day on the job. And let's assume, again, I'm a glass half full with everyone, unless you're a serial killer like Coburg or something, that you're a decent human being. Decent human being. She gets this new job. She rises through the ranks and she's excited. And she does probably an act of kindness during a trial or something. She takes care of a juror or jurors, and she gets some water, she gets lunch, or whatever she's supposed to do in a normal daily actions. And she gets validated by people saying, wow, you're really kind, you're really good. And so when you get that non-judgmental active validation, what's going on in the big four in the brain? The serotonin, the oxytocin, the dopamine, endorphins. They're firing because I did this. And so what happens is you get addicted to that behavior. So it's like, wow. Once you get one hit, I got to do a little bit more. And so they keep escalating up those staircase to get more of that hit, more of that hit, more of that hit.
Yeah.
And granted, they start out as very altruistic, good actions, safe, legal actions. But at a certain point, like you said, you start falling in love with your own legend, your own voice, and you get so addicted to that behavior and you keep going for that higher, higher hit, and you start thinking you actually have a bigger role and position, title, and influence than you're actually supposed to or do have, and you overstep the plate, the bounds, and the red line, and that's exactly what she did. She got addicted, hypothetically, conjecture on my side, got addicted to being overly involved than she should have. So she was blind to it because she's slowly boiling that frog over years or over a number of trials, and she undid herself.
Yeah, and I think when you have an environment where a lot of people are doing that simultaneously, it's like, well, this is just how we operate.
Yeah,
and the good old boys. Exactly. It is. I mean, this damn case is really kind of goes back to the Reba song where it's like, don't trust your soul to a backwoods Southern lawyer. Is that the songs?
I love country, yes.
It very much feels like that, where it's just, I mean, everything here, when we're talking earlier about the political end of this and all that, it just feels like everybody grabs onto the piece they want to use for their own motor, and they just go with it. And at the end of the day, it's like, well, then we kind of stop remembering what the purpose of this whole thing is about. It's about getting justice for two people who were murdered. It's not as a vehicle for someone's election bid or book deal or whatever. I mean, everybody has a lane that they're in, and it's just like, none of them, I think, really truly are focusing on getting justice for Maggie and Paul, other than maybe Creighton Waters, the attorney,
It's interesting, you know, when you think about what was going on in the case and how they're about to take down such a big name, that, you know, people that were going to really be heroes in this are the prosecutors, the judge who we loved. All these people are heroes. And I think she's trying to grab a slice of being a hero.
Yeah, I think
it's
so.
It's as simple as that. So she wanted to play a part in taking down this big name and share a piece. And now, granted, it's interesting if you think about it. the prosecutors, the judge, Judge Newman, they were just being who they were. That's their role and responsibility. They weren't trying to be heroes. They were just doing their job. She, again, overstepped what her roles and responsibility were to try to be something that she wasn't supposed to be, and whammo. And that's why, you know, so I'm incredibly distraught that we have to retry this case. But at the same time, as the great Bob Motta will say, and Eric Faddis as well, I'm glad the criminal justice system is working like it did, because she went out of her lane, and it screwed the entire case. It screwed our system. But the system's working that we're actually doing this.
I want to talk about another piece in the case here of Alec Murdaugh. Before we get to there, be sure to press subscribe wherever you're getting your podcasts or watching us or listening to us. Links are in the description if you want to join in on the conversation. We will definitely continue it there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The first time around the prosecution in the trial of Alec Murdaugh, they buried Alec Murdaugh under 12 hours of stolen money and defrauded clients. The Supreme Court just said that can't happen again. They gave conditions. I can't say it can't completely happen, but they gave conditions. So now Creighton Waters, if he's going to be the prosecuting attorney here, walks into a courtroom and has to convict on the actual evidence itself, the physical case, the same case where the crime scene sat in the rain, family walked through it, police walked through it, sled walked through it, no murder weapon was ever recovered, no DNA was found on the defendant, and the housekeeper says she flagged a suspicious vehicle to sled, and they blew it off, told her to go get mental help. Harputalin is already signaling he's going on the offense. He told reporters the reversal will bring reluctant witnesses out of the woodwork. Round two isn't just about whether Alec did it, it might be about whether anyone seriously investigated the possibility that someone else could have. With us to break it all down, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, and also Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, to help us discuss what's going on here. Jen Blanca Simpson, who's been on the show, is going to be on again very soon, says she told SLED about an unidentified white truck at Moselle on the day of the killings, parked near where Paul kept his firearms. And she says they dismissed it. She later identified it more specifically in private interviews than she ever actually did on the stand. You've been involved in federal cases for almost three decades here. When a witness gives you a vehicle near a weapons storage area hours before a double homicide and doesn't run that down, it makes, I think, a lot of people question the thoroughness of the investigation. Do you think there is going to be a lot of exposure this time around on just how unthorough this investigation was?
Well, the defense gets to have hindsight.
Sure.
And hindsight is a beautiful thing, but so does the prosecution. But I think in this case, it's going to benefit far greater the defense. And yes, in answer to your question, that's a pathetic response. Whenever there is any vehicle that is mentioned and described, if they're able to nail it down to that exact day and time, remember, sometimes people remember things and I have no doubt it happened, but they could be mistaken about the day or the time or exactly when that happened. Nevertheless, you've got to run it down. There should be some camera footage or some information related to why a van would be there. But I don't recall that information related in proximity to when this happened, meaning like minute, hour type proximity.
I believe she, according to her, and I'm just going off of memory here right now, it was like the day of that this happened, that there was this vehicle that was going around. She has a lot of things that she witnessed and that she told to police that never even made it into the trial. A lot of it's in her book. Because eventually it seems SLED, in her perception, dismissed her, told her to go get mental health help. And I don't think it was in a way of like, you've been through a lot. Like, it would be good to go talk to somebody. I think it was more like, yeah, you're crazy, go get some help. That's the way, at least I believe, she has interpreted the response from SLED with the valuable information she had. And she is one of the most valuable people in this case. I just it's very troubling to me that she was dismissed allegedly in the way that she was by the investigators for someone being that close with their finger literally. I don't want to make on the pulse. I mean, I'm not trying to make a weird reference here, but on the pulse of how that family operates is my point.
It's going to be important to get the other side of that story.
Yeah.
And this, and I wholeheartedly believe everything that she's saying, what she said was coming back to her. The words are coming back to her, because how things sound to the person receiving, especially in these high stress situations, compared to actually what is being done on the other side, can be extremely incongruent. And I guarantee, I'm not speaking for you, Jim, but I guarantee you've probably seen cases like this, because I've had people when I was in another field office outside of New York on work in counterintelligence that became sources of mine that were extremely grateful that I was their handler and they were going to be cooperating, working together with me, because quote unquote, the guy that showed up before you was a jackbooted thug carrying weapons and threatened my life and if I didn't cooperate. The guy's a really good guy and he didn't do that. I actually got video of him doing knocking on the front door, being very congenial. But again, that reverse context, and you can't argue ever context, because that's how it's perceived by the other person. So that's why it's really important to get both sides. And now Also the hindsight issue is also really critical. If you want to, I guarantee you this too, it's easier, like Jen said, for defense. But if you want to start picking apart how law enforcement did things wrong in hindsight, you will always find it, because there's always the critical vulnerability in every operation and every investigation. That's human beings, which are not perfect, which are fallible. And especially when you have, I would project probably name confirmation bias going on in this one, on any side of it. And because you, in this part of South Carolina, or really in any place, you have power brokers. And when you start having power brokers that wield influence over others, there's going to be confirmation issues that come into play that you have to overcome as well. So there's a lot of messiness going on there. But that 100%, they would have and should have, and hopefully at least now, run down the leads that the housekeeper's given, because that's a lot of really critical information that could come to play. Anyway, just my rant on all it all.
Harpootlin, like I said at the intro here, he said something very specific after the ruling, and that this reversal will give them access to reluctant witnesses. And if people don't come forward voluntarily, they'll use subpoena. What's different this round that they didn't do in round one? I mean, is there more people to call? Is there other angles? Did they not go to reluctant witnesses round one? What's your thought here? Is there more up the sleeve of Mr. Harpootlin that, for you know, whatever reason, was not brought onto the big stage the first time?
Well, you know, I've always said the number one mistake they made, and I understand that Murdaugh was pushing for this, was him testifying. I make this analogy with him. He was a dog on a wet linoleum floor, sliding around up there, couldn't get anything right. He made no sense. He stepped in it with that video, and that video is never going to go away. That video needs to be the number one piece of evidence, because that Snapchat showing Alec at the dog kennels at the time of the murder absolutely ruins the case for them. And remember, just because it's a new trial, it doesn't mean the old trial didn't happen. From the standpoint of there's testimony that is going to be there that you can't erase. People can't change their minds without being discredited by what they said the first time. So it's not like that evidence doesn't exist anymore. And I think they'll keep him off the stand. But he might be so arrogant and psychopathic that he might insist on going on again. I think it'll be a huge mistake.
It'll be really interesting, because he's had time to reflect as well and try to smooth out his performance, because I guarantee, you know, he's a performer. You know, people that can commit these acts, you know, when you're edging higher on the psychopathic scale with a lack of empathy, not because, again, not diagnosed and all that, but when you deal with someone that can do these horrendous things, innocent until proven guilty, but he was proven guilty once, so this is the retrial, trying round two. You know, if you start dealing with someone at least on the financial crime side, where you can so abhorrently take advantage of another human being, whether it's through violence or depriving them of a means of living. This is someone that's high on the psychopathic scale in the sense of they have zero empathy. And so they're mimicking the behaviors of others. And so that was an act. When you're seeing these things, it's not real. They're mimicking what they think the world wants to see or needs to see, and they're trying to make it congruent. So he might try to get better at that. Maybe being off of cocaine for the last, or whatever drugs he was taking for the last 3 years is going to help him. You know, so who knows? But yeah. Yeah.
The thing is, and yes, and that's the big crux of, I think, the whole retrial is they had like 12 days of evidence for the financial crimes that very thoroughly and factually showed what a manipulative, narcissistic, self-centered monster Alec Murdaugh is with money, and where what he stole from and who he stole from, stealing from disabled people. I mean, just it's insane. It's horrible. And at the end of it, you walk away going, yeah, he's totally capable of killing his family if he's able
part
to
of the
do
arc.
That.
Yep.
But if you pull all that out and you don't get it and you get like a very condensed version of it, that impact isn't there. That backstory doesn't exist. So you're not already there with him by the time you get to Alec on the stand shooting snot out of his nose, saying that he was that it was the Baba whatever the hell he's saying. All of that doesn't have the lead up, the build up. So
but
is
maybe
it,
the son and the housekeeper part of that arc now?
Yeah.
People like that.
I wonder how much going into this is going to be a different story from the jump, because in trial one, we didn't know about Alec, what we did with the video. We knew he was down there. We were going to see how he was going to explain it. And he explained it. He said he lied and he was down there the whole time and it was drugs that made him lie. If they're going in from the jump on this one, that he was down there, it's not all of the trial, all 6 weeks of it, saying that he wasn't, and then suddenly it changes at the moment of truth. If day one, yeah, I was down there, but you lied about it early on. Yeah, we've already established that I did, and here's why. I mean, you can't spend 6 weeks going, yeah, you lied about it. Yeah, we already established that, but we're moving on from that. It changes the whole trajectory of the case. It changes the whole acceptance of the evidence of where he was and why he was there. And I think they're going to have to do a lot more explaining beyond just the dramatic moment that we had in trial one with Alec shooting snot out of his face of why he was there. They're going to have a lot more time to go down that road. And it really could change. I mean, who knows what sort of stories they're going to come up with here with that round. How do you think that's going to play out, Jen, with now that's a fact going in on day one of this next trial?
Well, first of all, you make a great point. You know, for anybody who's watched what I think is the best thriller ever called The Sixth Sense, where you go through
yes.
at the end, you get this huge reveal. Anytime you've watched a movie like that, that is the problem with this trial, is the reveals there. And in the other trial, it had the biggest impact. And mm-hmm. they're not going to have that anymore. The other thing is the kennels don't exist. Remember, we heard from jurors that said that was a huge part.
Yeah, right. Yeah, walking the ground.
They are not there anymore to see that proximity, right? No. The close proximity and him there and how he couldn't have walked back from the house and everything. I mean, I think that is going to be catastrophic that they don't have that. As far as their approach, if I were them, I am going to have an alternative suspect, and I'm going to try.
That's the big one. Yeah.
Do you name it? Do you have a named alternative? Do you have to name an alternative as who it is, or just mystery person?
I think they're going to either do one of two things. I think they're going to go the drug route because of his, you know, drug. And by the way, Robin, if you don't think he's doing hooch.
Oh yeah, yeah. The fruit hooch,
lemons, rolling
toilet hooch. Yeah, the toilet hooch you make in the jail. Yeah,
oh my god,
Alec's a bartender now.
He's probably hooching it up. But anyway, that could be clouding what he ends up doing, so he might take the stand. But back to this, I think they'll have somebody, not a person, but definitely they might go the drug route. I tell you, if Buster turns on them, they could even try to turn on Buster. I think it's going to be ridiculous and hard to do, but They could try.
Yeah, I know they'd like to go down the alternate person route, but even after this amount of time, keeping someone silent with other people knowing for this period of time, and especially someone who's as self-serving and narcissistic as Alex is, he would have thrown someone under the bus, I would think, at this point in time. So I really think trying to introduce a third party that it could have been, or that someone's witty enough, I mean, it just, it's such a stretch. Because go ahead, Tony, what?
He was an attorney, though, too. You know, like, he has some, and I'm wondering if that's the difference here. They were all counting on, because they had a pretty strong card with Becky Hill. I think they knew. Yeah. The odds are pretty good here. We're going to get a retrial. So maybe we should all shut the F up and not leak a bunch of stuff from prison that's not going to help us. Let's hold on to it for the big show number two. I'm wondering how much of that was played in here too. And the fact that he was an attorney and that he has that sense about him, unlike someone like Corey Richens or something.
That's possible.
Well, the other thing is you have the boat aspect, right?
Yeah.
The whole death that happened and people that could have. And remember... He
what
says
a broken person, right? And just, and there's this, and there's this, and there's this. Sorry, but you're right. Keep going.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. And he said that on his initial interview. Remember the spontaneous, do you have anybody that could? Well, actually, I do. My son was involved in exactly how people don't act when their whole life has been destroyed in front of them, with their wife being murdered with a rifle as she crawled away and was hunted, and their son having their head blown off. You don't say, well, you know who could have done it is the people that are upset about the boating accident. So he's already thrown out that little whisper of a possibility. They're going to look at it all and figure out what works best. That's what they'll do.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Well, an interesting aspect of it was when the when he was held, when he got shot in the car where the bullet grazed him.
Yep, that's the other one I was thinking of.
The initial thing he did when they were trying to do a sketch of who he was claiming did it, he was trying to do a sketch of one of the kids from the boating accident. At least that's the assumption, because the sketch who he described looks suspiciously like that, like he's still trying to set up that story. So it's who knows? I'm excited to see him on the stand again, hopefully, and hopefully maybe they go down a road that doesn't work. And at the end, he's like, oh, it's all because of the prison hooch, and a bad lot in there, and it affected the brain of meeting amoebas in my head. And who knows where he's gonna go with it. I look forward to impersonating Alec Murdaugh more, because it's fun.
I'm excited to see him on the stand again, or just be in defense again, just to watch him squirm and be uncomfortable and lose. Yeah. Just knowing he's already in jail, and that's, that's again, my only fear is that somehow or other, because I remember when he originally, after he was convicted of this and sentenced, and he pled on the financial crime aspect, we're like, why would he do that? That's interesting. Does he have something up his sleeve that he's going to do on the? I just hope that everything on the finance side stands, so that no matter what, he's still in jail and he's probably going to die in jail. So that way you can watch him squirm it would just be so awesome to watch him lose miserably again.
No, the odds are there.
But it's until proven guilty.
Innocent until proven guilty. Yeah, we'll see.
Twice.
Yeah, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery. But we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Every dating app swap is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Every dating app swap is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Moto Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.